Blog Talk Radio.
Well, here we go, ladies and gentlemen, across the airways. If it's Monday, it's time for Talk Geek with Tyler Brook. His podcast is live from Pearl River, New York. Yours truly, Mark Mancini, producing it in sunny Los Angeles, where it's at about 105, 110 in the last 9 days. So heat wave taking a grip on California. Well, that's a story for another day. This is this show, 347-205-9631. We'll get you to the front of the line. If you miss it, catch the archive on blogtalkradio.com/Mancini Sports Podcast Platforms, wherever you subscribe to podcasts, powered now by Mancini Media. So without further ado, more him, less of me, let me lay the red carpet down, put the podium in its place, hand off the mic. First of all, Tyler, how are you?
Hey, Mark, I'm doing absolutely well today. Thank you for asking. And before I get to the whole usual introduce myself, introduce my guests, I'd like to take a moment to thank Kitty Cat Rugs for sponsoring this episode. That group page is called Kitty Cat Rugs. You may find them on Facebook. Now, I'm going to do a brief talk about myself. You can find all my social medias at geektalkwithtyler.com, Insta, Facebook, Venmo if you're feeling a little generous with that green. And tip your friendly neighborhood Tyler man. And if you just want to listen to me talk for free, I guess that's okay. And now I'd like to thank my guest. Alex, thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedule to talk to me. And would you like to tell everybody what you're working on, where you can be found, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera?
Absolutely, yeah. Thank you for having me.
Of course.
I'm a manga illustrator, and you can find my work on patreon.com/spritestale. You know, sprite, like the soda or the video game kind of character, but in this case, mythological creature. So SPRITESTALE. That's patreon.com/spritestale. And you can read the entire mythological adventure on that website for free up to chapter 18. And after that, you know, if you are feeling generous, you can always read the rest of the chapters for as low as $2 to $5 in terms of subscription status.
Terrific, terrific. And for those of you out there that don't know what a manga is, it's basically a Japanese, or I guess in this case, a Japanese-inspired comic series.
Mm-hmm.
And we're already getting our first question. Denise from San Francisco. Another great show, Tyler. Keep up the great work. Denise, thank you, and I hope you enjoy this shout-out. Our episode today is going to be adult themes in animation. Before we get started, I just want to make one thing very clear. If you're expecting me to talk about shows like Family Guy or South Park or Beavis and Butthead, I'm going to put the brakes on that right now. We are not going to be talking about any of those shows. By adult themes in animation, we're going to be talking about things that were intended for children but have much more darker tones to them, something that an adult such as myself can truly appreciate, and many others will as well. Alex, when you think of adult themes in animation, what's the very first thing that comes to your mind?
The first thing that popped into my mind was when I saw the Spawn movie as a little kid in the 90s, the animated movie. And that was adult theme in its most gratuitous form. But then with a little more nuanced thought, you know, the Bruce Timm-verse of Batman, Superman, the animated adventures, Justice League, that kind of stuff popped into my head. I think you had also mentioned Gargoyles at one point.
For the record, you're talking to Kevin Conroy, Batman, and the Tim Daly Superman, right?
Yes. Yes, I am.
All right. Awesome. My favorite Superman-Batman pairing. And, yeah,
yep.
The DCAU, or DC Animated Universe, for those of you that don't know, has been very dark with its themes. Like, for those of you that call my Facebook and or Instagram story, one of the three pictures I put in was the episode where Ace dies in Batman's arms. Still one of the more powerful episodes of Justice League to date. It was just really tragic how that happened. And like many tragic events, or I guess tragic moments in media, people find a way to make a meme out of it. And it's just kind of messed up that they do, but I get it. I like my humor the way I like my bird meat, dark. But I don't know. It's just really wow how they did that. But just so I don't all talk about DC for this episode, one of my favorite moments, I would say series that tackle adult issues or adult themes to it, would be Gargoyles. I tell you, And if you catch my episode with Crispy, Gargoyles, the Black Sheep of Disney, it really was the black sheep because it had so many adult themes with. Hell, the very first episode, I kid you not, dealt with genocide. Do you know any of those shows that started like that?
Not really.
Maybe Superman.
In Finding Nemo, they wipe out like 299 children, but, you know.
Well, I mean, there's only Superman, but to be fair, that's always his origin story. The last man
that
of Krypton.
True.
Yeah. And we're already getting some comments. Dennis from Utica, New York. Any fans of Star Wars? Here I know they keep coming. Yeah, I'm going to be honest with everybody. Star Wars really stopped being good in the 80s. Now at this point, it's just additional canon just for the sake of additional canon. I mean, I get it. It's a business. It is. But it really devalues the art with all this additional stuff, my opinion. And we're now getting Steve from, and I apologize if I'm butchering this, Corvallis, Oregon. How about Avatar, Money Making? If you're referring to Avatar as in the Airbender, we are getting talks in regards to another live-action adaptation. And this one's going to be a series, so hopefully it'll be more faithful to the book. But if you're referring to Blue People Avatar, yeah, that has been a sequel waiting to happen. And good for them that are finally having the gall to go through with that.
You know, Avatar the Last Airbender was another, it was another TV show that dealt with adult themes in a childhood TV show for a lot of people.
Yeah, and even that series dealt with genocide.
I mean,
it was off screen,
so you
really didn't
dealt...
see as much of it. But yeah, it's just...
Well, something more important, it actually, well, more important than genocide, equally as important, but paired with genocide, it talked about how history gets rewritten by the winners, not necessarily as it actually went down, like that episode where they kind of like went undercover in the Fire Nation as students, and everything was told from this complete and total, you know, washed out version of Fire Nation history, where, you know, everybody but them was the enemy. It was a really intense theme. Like, even Zuko realizes it at some point in the series that, you know, he was brought up to only think of the Fire Nation as these salvation, as these, like, saviors to everybody in the world, but then realized nobody had asked for that salvation.
Or is that the Ember Island Flay episode?
I haven't given Avatar any new rewatches, so I couldn't tell you succinctly which episodes they happened in. I remember major themes. I remember dialogues. I do know that this is one of the themes of history being rewritten and the heroes of our show kind of figuring all of that out as more of the Fire Nation was being shown, but I couldn't tell you the exact episode.
Well, I mean, either way, it was just surprising that we were able to get Mark Hamill, of all people, to play Fire Lord Ozai.
Sounded like he had a good time doing it.
Yeah, but to be fair, he has a good time playing all of his villains. Ozai,
yeah.
Kavaxis, if you catch the 2012 Turtles series. Freaking Joker,
mm-hmm.
who, fun fact, Harley Quinn's birthday just happened yesterday. She is, by standards of media, 30 years old today.
Oh, happy birthday
and,
to her.
And even Harley Quinn's origins kind of get a little adult there. She's literally a living case of Stockholm Syndrome at its most prime example.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, is it still considered Stockholm Syndrome if you actually just go insane? Because from what I remember, she actually kind of, it wasn't as much as she empathized with the Joker as he broke her psyche. He drove her insane. The more she studied him, the more she got to know him, the more her brain couldn't handle figuring out his.
That's how it started, but it eventually went down the rabbit hole that is Stockholm Syndrome, because when she donned on the Harley Quinn costume, he was just very abusive to her.
Yeah.
So, yes, that is a very Stockholm Syndrome work of animation. I think it's the only one I can think of. I'm sure there are others, and we are now getting a statement. Jack from Tallahassee, Florida. How about the successful Simpsons That's a great animated show. It was, and I say was, because I feel like they're just going because Disney wants them to make more episodes. I mean, at this point, The Simpsons are older than I am. I mean, don't get me wrong.
How old are
you? Very talented. Well, let's see. They debuted in the Tracy Ullman show in 88, but then they became their own show and arguably the most famous spinoff series of all time in 89. So, yes, about 30-plus years.
Well, yeah, I was born in 88, so The Simpsons are about as old as me exactly.
Yeah, that's another mind-blower for you. Many adults are as old as The Simpsons.
Yeah, they debuted when I was born,
I suppose. At hand, those are some prime examples of adult themes in animation. But I got to tell you, are you a Transformers fan, Alex?
I was when I was a little kid. I really enjoyed the TV show. I didn't latch onto the franchise as intensely as my older brother did, but I watched all the series. I even watched Beast Wars and stuff like that.
Well,
I had a lot of fun
with it.
Funny
you mentioned that, because that's actually the next example I'd like to bring up. The series starts off with four Maximals, the descendants of the Autobots, and six Predacons, the descendants of the Decepticons, and they start to and they begin essentially the whole Great War all over again, because Megatron stole the Golden Disk, which is essentially the written history of Cybertron, and it intertwines with Earth. One of the Predacons, Dinobot, who, spoiler alert, turns into a Velociraptor, sees this and he realizes we're on the wrong planet. And then he challenges Megatron, and then boom, he eventually defects and joins the Maximal. And during this whole transition, he's had struggles of inner turmoil on why is he here? Did I make the right choice in joining these? And then season two comes along about halfway. We get the best episode, arguably one of the best episodes, in the entirety of Transformers lore, which is Code of Hero. For those of you that aren't familiar with Beast Wars, they are on the right planet, but to be fair, it was a prehistoric Earth. So once they realized, oh, shit, this is prehistoric Earth, we can destroy all the primitive humans, and without the help from the humans, the Decepticons can beat the Autobots. Dinobot realizes this, realizes history is not meant to be changed, and he sacrifices himself in order to make sure that the primitive humans never get destroyed. Easily one of the best written episodes out there. Scott McNeil did a terrific job with that episode. You can catch the entirety of Beast Wars on YouTube. And yes, please write in the comments, this show was suggested by Tyler Brook of Talk Geek with Tyler Brook. Great recommendation. So yes, if you want to give me a shout on YouTube, I do appreciate that as well. But yes, now that we have those examples out of the way, I think we need to ask ourselves, why do we have adult themes in shows that aren't necessarily targeted for adults? Have you ever wondered that, Alex?
You know, as a writer, it is something that goes through my head every now and again. And as someone who grew up in the 90s and suffers from we had it better when we were kids syndrome, I think about that a lot. And I think one of the biggest things is that we have it, or we had it, for proper developmental purposes. Good writing deserves to be everywhere, and heavy themes deserve to be everywhere, regardless of what age group is watching. As long as you can create those themes and make them digestible to the minds of the demographic you're showing it to, there's no reason not to show it to that demographic. There's no reason to shield, fence off, coddle, or guard anybody from an actual real-life problem or situation, because they won't understand it later on when it actually does happen. Your formative years, when you're developing, it's the best time to put that kind of information out there, because that's when your brain is learning how to process that kind of information without it being a trauma you actually have to live through. It's where you learn empathy. It's where you learn critical thinking. It's where you learn multidimensional thinking. And it's how you learn how to be a proper creative and a a bigger thinker for your age group than you otherwise would be when you have those things. And when you don't have them, you end up very shallow, I think. You end up very unable to chew on heavy topics.
You know, first off, I'm going to give a credit where credit's due. I love that term you mentioned, the "it was better when we were kids" syndrome. We got to make that a term. But you're not wrong. As a creator myself, not just for this show or my other show, you can catch my book, Peter and the Cold Christmas, which will serve as the episode for my Geek Talk with Tyler show and is currently in the works of becoming an adapted either to television or movie. And essentially, it's a story, and when I wrote this, I initially wrote this as a what-if concept. When I wrote it, I saw myself in Peter. It's basically the story about a boy who misbehaves all year round just to get cold to keep his family warm during the winter months.
That's brilliant. I really like that.
Thank you. And if you'd like a copy, please do not hesitate to shout out to your friendly neighbor, Tyler Man. Hey, where can I get a copy?
Yeah.
Now that we've said that, you are not wrong, sir. There's no reason why we shouldn't shy from using adult themes and stories. Another episode I can think of is the Gargoyles. It was like the 8th episode. Broadway, one of the Gargoyles, and funny enough, same guy that voices Patrick Starr in SpongeBob, Bill Fagerbach. But to be fair, this was pre-Patrick Starr. He gets a hold of Elisa's gun. He sees he's playing around with it because he's thinking, pow, pow, like a cowboy, pow, pow. And then he shoots Elisa with a gun. It's like, oh, what have I done? Realizing the dangers of gun violence.
Yeah, I remember that
episode. It was banned from Disney Plus for a while, but I'm glad that's no longer the case.
Yeah, and
so yeah, gun violence is another thing that really should be discussed, or more often, I should say. Because I still feel like people play with guns like it's a, I don't want to say like it's nothing, but there's no.
I get what you're saying. I get what you're saying, and I think it's because usually you are in Broadway's position where when you're not watching any sort of media that's bringing you up to understand the gravity of how dangerous the weapon is, you are only in that cowboy mindset where you see yourself as the hero, and if the weapon is in your hand and you're the hero, then the only thing that can be produced from your interaction with this thing is beating bad guys. Surely you're not going to be so irresponsible or terrible as that you'll hurt anybody. It's not your intention. It's what you're not thinking about doing that, and you only want to be the good guy. You know, you want to be the white hat, as it were. So I think when you see that even someone who is a hero, you know, Broadway was a gargoyle. He was an otherworldly creature. He could, you know, fly. He had great strength and claws, and he was this, like, you know, he was a superhero essentially. Even he could still hurt somebody who was near and dear to him with something that he had no experience in, had never picked up, and wasn't supposed to be messing around with. And when you see yourself as a Broadway type and you realize that can happen to your hero, you realize it can happen to you. And that's important when you're a little kid.
You're not wrong on that. I'm going to say that. And it definitely did help Broadway's character throughout the rest of the series. Every time somebody pulled a gun, he just grabbed it and destroyed it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, each of the trio had their own moments of character growth. But
I remember that Broadway had Broadway had a lot of growth. I remember because he was responsible for a lot of, I don't want to say a lot of screw-ups, but he felt guilty for a lot of stuff. Like, I know that the only reason Broadway survived the genocide was because he was punished by Goliath for causing too much trouble, and he was sent to the rookery. And it's the only reason he and the others were one of the survivors.
Well, in the interest of fairness, Broadway wasn't really causing trouble. He was just there, wrong place, right time.
Yeah.
So it was just dumb luck that he survived. The only ones that were really causing troubles were the gargoyles that would eventually become Lexington and Brooklyn. And the
reason
I say that
is because
gargoyles are not like humans. And obviously they have wings and turn to stone, and you can argue that. No, that's not what I mean by that. They don't have names. Or at least their parents, or at least their whole rookery kin, don't give them names. Because they don't see themselves as an individual. They see themselves as part of a group. So when you name something, it individualizes it. Not only did they wake up 1,000 years later, did they realize that, hey, you know what? Why don't I give myself a name? And pretty much every gargoyle names himself after something New York related. But the way it happens, or it starts out, is hilarious, in my opinion. Where Hudson's like, nothing's real to you unless you give it a name. That river, does it have a name? Elisa goes, yes, that's the Hudson.
Called the Hudson. And he goes, then I shall be called the Hudson.
Exactly. Easily just one of the low-key funniest moments in the entirety of the show. And you can catch all of Gargoyles on Disney+. And if you would like to catch my interview with the creator, Greg Wiseman, please go to my Anchor page, also on the website, and listen to the episode there. Gotta tell you, one of the better experiences I've had in my life. That said, yes, pretty much all of Greg Wiseman's works have adult themes to them. Spectacular Spider-Man, Star Wars Rebels, Young Justice. That's just adult themes and animation done to its best form, in my opinion. You ever catch any of those shows there, Alex?
Yeah, actually, I did. I caught a few of them. When I was a kid, I watched The Spectacular Spider-Man. Well, I guess when I was a kid, most of my reruns and whatnot, I've been watching these shows over and over again my whole life, as long as the TV's on. Go through some of them again. I have a very short-term memory. I'm like a goldfish. I heard Spectacular Spider-Man. I know Gargoyles. What are some of the others that we called out?
Young Justice, Star Wars Rebels. And, it's funny. That's how Steve Bloom started working with Greg Wiseman.
You know, I saw parts of Young Justice, but I never got to finish it. It's one of those things I've been meaning to restream and catch up with.
Well, since we're not getting a season 5 of Young Justice, feel free to binge watch the whole thing on HBO Max, along with the other DC content. Which, this isn't really much of an adult theme, but one of the best episodes, in my opinion, of the DCAU continuity is the one where Superman meets the little imp, Mr. Mixia Spitalek, who's voiced by the late and great Gilbert Gottfried.
Gilbert Gottfried, yeah.
Basically, he's a little imp who just causes chaos, just for the sake of causing chaos. And he said, oh, I just want to make a game of it. And Superman's like, games have rules, you don't. And he's like, okay, how about this? If you get me to say my name backwards, I'll disappear. And what do I have to say? My name backwards. That's right. And what's your name backwards? Kip Tilt sees him. Jesus, you're thick. Now, for the last time, And then he disappears.
And then he vanishes. Yep.
Yeah. It was like easily a superhero game of cat and mouse.
Yeah, it was fun. I remember enjoying the more lighthearted episodes like that when I was a kid.
Absolutely. But that just goes to show you that the DCAU is known for their darker themes. They do give you us a nice light and fluffy episode every now and again.
Yeah, well, I think that's essential because it resets the audience to accept the darker themes after that. You can't just keep hitting the people watching your show with grimdark, grimdark, grimdark. If you don't have something to lighten the mood, no one ever is ready for the full impact of the next grimdark moment that you have. And that's why I think the Bruce Timm verse did it so well, where there were so many well lighthearted episodes and then something really heavy would happen.
Yeah, apparently.
And I think that forged a solid
Martin,
generation
of children. Add fluffy stuff to an otherwise dark series.
Yeah.
Yeah, but then again.
Started on George R. R. Martin.
Yeah. Game of Thrones. A series that was beloved for 6.5 seasons and then despised for the last season and a half.
Oh, I fell off at season 6. I couldn't.
Exactly.
I watched it, but all of my passion for it, all my love, everything that I had considered worth watching in that show went right out the window at season 6. That show had the half-life of Scrubs.
Here's my honest review of Game of Thrones. I appreciate it for what it is, but it's essentially the love child of Lord of the Rings and Shakespeare, and then that love child was raised by HBO and woke culture. I mean, is
that's
that brutal?
A take.
Yeah. That's all
that's
it really is,
a
man.
Take.
But with that said, yes, I think we do need to appreciate all forms of adult themes, whether they're in animation or even live action, or that weird Roger Rabbit X combination of live action and animation.
You know,
does
I do appreciate those combinations. Roger
I mean,
Rabbit
last thing I think
book?
I saw. No, not Roger Rabbit himself, just like the combination of live action and animation. Oh, wait,
you know,
yeah,
we haven't really
Rescue
done
Rangers
stuff like that
movie.
In a very long time. Yeah. Well, I think that was the most recent iteration, but was there anything in between that during that massive gap of time between Roger Rabbit and the new Rescue Rangers movie? Was there any sort of person and cartoon type of movie? Where, like,
I'm sure
the,
there was,
where the humans
but nothing
knew,
really
where the humans knew they were interacting
head.
With a cartoon.
Yeah, that kind of always annoyed me. I mean, I get
really?
What they were going for, but it's just like, it feels like one of those shit or get off the pod moments, you know?
No, I kind of liked it. I like when they know it's a cartoon. It gives the cartoons their own identity, their own universe to exist in. I think that's kind of fun.
All right. Well, there you go, everybody. It's kind of fun. And is it? It is, in a way, but it just kind of feels very indecisive on their part. But let us know what you think in the comments. Or just message me, hey, how dare you say that? Well, how dare I have freedom of speech? So there.
Indeed.
But on that note, Alex, is there anything you'd really like to throw in before we start wrapping up this episode?
You know, we only have like 2-3 minutes left, so I would need like another good 10 minutes to talk about any of the examples that I had in my head. But I think I've said mostly everything that I've wanted to say. I think that the adult themes in cartoons are wildly important because they teach kids empathy, critical thinking, and how to mature at a much more steady rate of comprehension to the themes that they're going to be introduced to in life anyway. It's going to happen.
Yeah.
And I think that if a good writer, like any good story, like any reason for a story to have ever existed, if a good writer can deliver that kind of growth, empathy, and information to a young, developing, hungry mind early on, they will have the tools, you know, and the inner resources needed to handle such events when it actually happens to them and not just trip up. And one of the things, I said this yesterday to my girlfriend, and I think it's wildly important to say to anybody listening, it's one thing to always remember when you're a little kid that you want to be a hero and fight evil. You know, hero, it's very black and white. A hero will always want to hit something evil. And it's a very, very obvious, rudimentary, simplistic way of viewing what it means to be a hero. But then you have episodes like the Justice League, where Batman had to deal with the trauma of a girl who knew she was dying. And then it becomes the question of, okay, you can't punch that evil. You can't destroy it. And there's no way around it. How do you be a hero to something like that? And the fact that Batman knew that he just needed to sit down next to her and hold her hand and be there with her till the end, and sometimes that's all you can do, and that's still being a hero. You can't always punch your enemies. You can't always punch the thing that's ruining your life or causing you tragedy or trauma, and it's just as important for little kids to know that sometimes all you can do is be there, hold the victim's hand, and just be a protective force.
Terrific. And
you
thank
you,
Alex,
that
for taking
that
the time
there.
Out of your busy schedule to come here today.
Hey, no, it was my pleasure. I got as much of the text as I possibly could out in my chapter draft today to get that to be here. So
awesome. And thank you again for all of you for listening. And don't forget to check out my sponsor, my guest's works. And if you're feeling terrible, please donate to the Geek Talk with Tyler page because he likes Topnia, but he's not doing it for free. So thank you all for listening. Stay geeky, and don't forget to catch next week's episode. Bye-bye now.